This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 12 years, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon and into what stuff means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. You can listen to episodes online, get them off iTunes or Google Play, or subscribe using a podcast app. Whatever way you choose, they're free and there's a new one weekly. The 16.9 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported from the start by Jeremy Gavin and his team at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. Beth Warren of Creative Realities, or CRI for short, came recommended as a speaker for the DSF's recent Coffee and Controversy event in New York. We'd never met, and while I was there, I seized the opportunity to meet up with her after the event to talk a lot about digital signage and retail from her longtime lens as the Senior VP of Experience Planning at CRI. She comes out of the agency world, so that means she comes at signage and retail from a very different perspective and set of learned experiences and observations. We go fairly deep into what experience actually means and what genuinely works in retail versus some of the trickery and gadgets that get touted as delivering, and I'm doing air quotes here, engagement. We also get a little into what CRI does and the many twists and turns of its recent history. The company has evolved and now positions itself very much as a solutions provider that can take retailers from the need and idea through to lighting up the visuals and measuring the impact. Beth, thank you for taking some time with me. We're sitting in New York looking out over really tall buildings. Yeah,
that's Midtown.
The end of a long day. You did the Coffee and Controversy with me this morning, and now you're stuck with me again.
I'm loving it. I'm happy to continue the conversation.
So we chatted once on the phone, but we met just this morning. You have been with CRI for how long now?
I've been with Creative Reality 6 years.
Okay.
So 2012, I joined the company.
And as Senior VP of
Experience Planning, which is...
What does that mean?
Experience planning is the process of utilizing strategy to be able to plan out the journey in a way that will facilitate...
The shopper journey.
The shopper journey, okay. Exactly. Or even the consumer journey, because...
What's the difference?
It depends on the mindset of the end user. When you're in consumption mode, your mindset is different than when you're in shopping mode.
Okay.
Okay. When you're looking to buy something and you're on that path to purchase, and when you are navigating an environment for, you know, a very everyday reason or because you're wanting to explore, you have, there's different things going on in your brain that will make you susceptible to messaging and to other kinds of engagement tools.
Okay.
So the value of taking a look at the journey from a behavior standpoint is to be able to really add value to it so that you are coming out a shopper or a consumer, if you will, at the right place at the right time with the right message, with the right tool that will be helpful and additive.
Now, the right place, right time thing, that's been around as long as I've been in digital signage.
It has, but I don't think it's been around for digital signage people. Because digital signage people tend to look at a sign and want to sell it for advertising, number one. Digital signage people also don't connect the dots or really take as much or have as much discipline with the content.
No,
because the
for
content
sure.
is actually more important than the technology itself.
Oh, yeah.
So... when we sit down with clients to talk about, okay, what are we going to do to transform the experience or what are we going to do to transform an environment or to make it intelligent or responsive or aware or connected, the first question that we ask is, what's going on with who's in the store or in the environment now? What are they doing? What aren't they doing? And why not? Because in the why not, that unlocks the insight that helps us kind of turn things right side up. So that's a really, really important question. It's about changing behavior and being able to, you know, put the pieces together in order to inspire somebody to do something that either they were having a hard time doing, that was a pain point for them, or that they didn't think about. And only then, after we're really clear about what somebody should be doing or could be doing more of or different, that's when we say, okay, what's the right set of tools to engage them with? And that's when we begin to talk about how does digital play a role.
Mm-hmm. My experience is, and when I speak with people, they generally will say retailers really don't seem to know what they want.
So true.
They are interested in wow. They're interested in putting screens
yes.
in. They've got some space over on a wall
yes.
here. Maybe we put something there and so on. What is happening now that compels them to actually engage you, talk to a company like CRI about this discipline, this process of figuring out, okay, what are these five W's and what to do?
The five W's, that's funny that you say that. Okay, so the reason
I'm an old journalist,
why...
I love it.
So the reason why, if you think about it in practical terms, the reason why retailers love the wow mm-hmm. is because it's new news, really. And retail is in the business of putting something new in front of the customer. If you're not mm-hmm. putting something new in front of them, they're less likely to come back again. So the wow factor in delivering something that's exciting is a really important part of their business.
But what's the shelf life on that?
You know what? Unless you support it, unless you change it and reignite it, and unless you change it, mm-hmm. the shelf life is short. So retailers struggle with a return on investment for the wow factor.
Mm-hmm.
Also, retailers don't always understand what kind of problem they're having. Sometimes they say, you know what? I actually want people to come through the door. They think they have a foot traffic problem. So they use the wow factor thinking that they're going to get more people in the door, mm-hmm. okay? But really the opportunity that they have, it's before them, is to get more people who are already inside doing more.
Right.
So we try to really unpack that with clients to make sure that they're not missing the problem definition. And by the way, digital is more fit for retaining and expanding folks than it is for attracting people off the street.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have a piece of real estate that's so big and so powerful, eventually that's going to be white noise.
Mm-hmm.
So we recommend typically a nice combination of, you know, beautiful digital displays that really are abruptive and interrupt,
mm-hmm.
but also you have to have those things in store that really help people shop and give them, you know, a sense of satisfaction and get them on their way, because they don't necessarily want to be spending all their time with you. And that's another kind of pitfall that retailers make.
Mm-hmm.
They assume that if it's clever or if it's a gimmick or if it's fun, they'll spend more time or dwell will increase, but that's not necessarily true either, mm-hmm. you know? So
yeah,
I don't know what your thoughts are about that, but...
Well, I remember seeing a video case study about a Verizon store in the Mall of America.
Okay.
In Minneapolis. And I had seen stores similar to it where they had like virtual skiing machines and they were using all kinds of Kinect
yep.
sensors and all kinds of bells and whistles to get shoppers excited about being there. And I thought at the time, A, this is stupid. B, it's going to break.
I agree.
And anytime I've ever been in particularly sporting goods stores
yep.
where they've gone to town on this stuff, Kinect sensors, whatever it is, they're not working. And unless you have a almost like an event marketer there pulling people in saying, here, try this, they sit forlorn and empty. And I have often found the best digital signage in a retail environment is the thing that tells me it's over there, whatever I'm looking for, or it's on sale. Just like utilitarian stuff. Just make it easier for me.
Make it easy. I was at an event last year. The ICX, I think, is a terrific event for
digital. It's one down in Dallas, right?
It's the one in Dallas, yeah. And they just have a host of really smart speakers. And Rafa Khanna from Taco Bell has a catchphrase, make it easy or make it awesome. Make it easy or make it awesome. And I love that. It just resonated with me because easy is what people need.
Yep.
Because first of all, they are navigating on the move. Mm-hmm. So you're asking people to take on a lot when they're moving through an environment. They have their list. They have in their head what they need to get done. The brain is working very hard at deselecting and pushing out all of the stimulation that it takes. So, you know, it's often very jarring when we get in front of them with things that might not make sense.
Right.
So I'm not a fan of gimmicks. I discourage, you know, my clients from gimmicks. I say, keep it simple. Have it do one thing and have it do one thing really, really well.
Right.
Measure it and then see where it goes from there. Dina, I agree with you.
Yeah, we spoke this morning about being in New York and all the flagships are here. And of course, they're in Hong Kong and London and a few other places like that. And you have a flagship store. I walk down Fifth Avenue. The Zara's got big direct view LEDs all through the store. And
Victoria's Secret is a gorgeous example of a flagship.
But that's not a normal retail environment. And those are multi-million dollar investments in those flagship stores. And that seems to be wow on a grand scale.
Totally,
without
and
any,
it's not scalable, right?
And how do you measure the this $750,000 you put into the back wall that's just showing stuff?
I don't know if it's being measured.
You're just doing it.
I'm not convinced that it's being measured.
And should it be? Or is it a flagship and all bets are off?
I think it should be measured. I think it should be programmed to respond to who's in front of it. And that gives you insight to how effective it is. So it's a good question, really, about flagship investment, and you just invest and you throw money into it because it's big, bold, beautiful experience, and that's what people want, and that's what people expect. And that's how you kind of have to do business. In that context, you absolutely do. But I'm not convinced it's being measured in terms of return on investment or making the cash register ring anymore. I don't.
And
I haven't seen statistics about new traffic coming in.
Right.
I haven't. I'm looking far and wide and I have not. So I'd love to see more use cases on whether that really
is working hard
for that.
I have seen this evolution of large footprint stores, larger footprint stores, going from really embracing digital signage and putting flat panel screens in all over the place. And then seeing those same retailers tear almost all of them out and put in one high profile video wall of some kind and said, now here's our thing.
Right.
And I don't know that either is right because they're still just throwing technology at it.
I do. I don't think it's connected to any real strategy. I don't know if it's part of the journey or if it's part of an ecosystem. When I walk into a store, I would love for technology to come to me instead of me to go to it.
Right.
So what might that look like? I might have my phone in my hand and it welcomes me. Hi, Elizabeth, welcome back. I might pick up something from the shelf and there's a sign that there's a motion trigger or a sensor there that then tells me the story about what it is I'm, you know, looking at and helping me compare so that I can make the right choice, really. I would love to be able to grab information on the go. If I'm not ready to make the purchase, if I can put my mobile, wave it in front of it, and I can take that product information or some sort of a video or some, you know, any consumer ratings or rankings that are available right there and take that with me, you know, and that I can transact later if I want to in an omni-channel way. I love technology that tells me how much time I have to wait in a queue. Whole Foods is terrific at that. So is Trader Joe's. I love technology that allows me to call a sales associate when I'm in the fitting room to help me find something. Lululemon does a great job at that. So those are the types of, you know, sort of practical, tactical kinds of examples of tech that I think are way more useful.
Right. In those cases, particularly Whole Foods and Lulu, you're talking about companies who've invested a lot of time in their brand and experience. But 99% of the retailers out there
don't seem
to do that, because everything you just laid out, you could do today.
All of it you can do today. All of it you can do today, but I don't see it so widespread.
So why is it? Is it just too busy quarterly numbers?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of distractions. I think there's also a divide at either the inside the marketing organization or inside the retail organization of who owns what. Mm-hmm. And I think because it's not necessarily clearly defined, is this in store planning? Is this in digital? Is this a marketing function? I think there's a lot of squabbling for budget and for strategy. I don't think retailers, and I know this from my work with Kohl's and Macy's, mm-hmm. okay, they're not incentivized to cooperate together. They are not. And that results in vendor partners, whether it's an agency or a company like Creative Realities, having to be the hub, having to be that monkey in the middle, that person, that group that aligns the internal resources to a potential solution. And it's really tough because sometimes the internal sell is harder than actually getting the design developed and deployed.
Right.
And that's been a recurring theme in, I probably have had 400 engagements, I kid you not, of all different sizes and types across many, many, many different categories during my time with Creative Realities. And the one common theme is there's a lot of silos which hold back productivity and excellence as a result.
Ideally, you get called by retailer X. Can you please come in? We have a problem. We'd love to help you guys solve it. What are they, who's in that meeting?
Okay, so usually when we're called for, it's usually I have a fantasy, not necessarily a problem, or I've got to replace something that's broken.
Okay.
Okay. Nonetheless, who's in that meeting? It's operations, it is store planning, and it's my favorite group to work with, which is visual merchandising. Sometimes category management will be there, whoever's assorting or procuring the goods. Mm-hmm. I don't work with marketing as much as you think I would, and that's very, very interesting. It's just very, very interesting. The marketing role tends to worry about or preside over the communication strategy, not necessarily what goes on in the retail mix.
Right.
Okay? And in marketing organizations, digital and retail don't cross because digital is about the web and retail is about the transaction. Mm-hmm. So I'm in a unique position, I think, just with my background to be able to talk both tech from a present point of view, retail from a past point of view.
Because you came out of
agency. Because I came out of the agency world, yeah. So so I think that gives me a distinct advantage in helping, our company service better and also helping the industry ask the right questions, demand the right things of itself.
I guess because in the agency world, you're spending a lot of time in very nuanced, sometimes political conversations and everything else, and you're just kind of used to.
Well, you go in with a defined scope of work for a year, and it's an AOR engagement, agency of record. Mm-hmm. So you're with the same people all the time and you know what your workflow is and you know what your plan is for the year and you know that you have to make a certain number of things happen. Mm-hmm. And it's not just television commercials. I think this morning I heard a comment or two about, I just want to make $1 million ad. I think it's very, very different now. I respect the direction that agencies are going in and they are, if they're not small, they're acting small. Which means that they're much more open to solving problems where it really matters for the brand, okay? And making sure that their brand has purpose, and digital or technology is a huge component of that. So I applaud what I see these days.
But it's gotta be tough for agencies and for their clients because agencies are conditioned to producing $1 million ad spots or $100,000 ad spots or whatever, and
they're
evergreen spots or at least they're seasonal or something. And in digital signage world, really those spots probably need to be refreshed weekly or even with higher frequency than that. And that business model is not sustainable.
It does. Well, I think it's creating content. Content is the new word for advertising. So I think, they would say in the agency world, either you're a director, a frustrated director, or a frustrated screenwriter. So I think the agencies have much more of an opportunity and they're excited about being able to create all different kinds of content pieces. Mm-hmm. And I think the word signage is probably either misunderstood or disparaged in the agency vernacular, mm-hmm. in the agency parlance, because signage itself says, well, that's a nice to have, it's not a must have. So I'm very careful about using that word because mm-hmm. it sounds passive and it sounds like it hasn't earned its right. So I'm careful when I'm speaking with my marketing cohorts mm-hmm. and if I'm working with agencies, you know, to co-create something for any given environment. We talk about digital in terms of, you know, what's that experience that you need to deliver to engage someone to get them to do something, mm-hmm. you know, in the name of the brand or in the name of the retailer.
Are the retailers thinking at all in terms of this fabled notion of omnichannel that we're going to produce pieces of content that will actually sort of span out, spider out across all these different mediums, so to speak?
You know, I think that they produce content and realize they produce it with the mindset of being able to run it in multiple places. Okay. So there's a technical component to that. I've got to have all the formats right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then there's a creative component that they're able to adapt along the way. So Sephora, for example, mm-hmm. they might create something for one of their stores that might be a version of something that they might put on their Instagram account. I think Sephora is a great example of good omnichannel retailing because they engage with their customer on the customer's terms. So if you want to transact on your mobile, it's, you know, a responsive experience, right, native to the mobile than to online, for example. But content is really important in an omnichannel experience, and it's got to be contextually relevant. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I think that can't be lost. That's an important, mm-hmm. you know, it's got to be right for where you're at in the journey.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
So CRI's had numerous twists and turns over the years. How do you define what Creative Realities does in 2018? Like, I would call you guys a solutions provider. Is that?
I think that's fair. Uh-huh. You know, it sounds a little bit stiff, solutions provider. Uh-huh. I like to call us a creative technology company. We design, develop, deploy connected experiences. And I use that word strategically because the experiences should connect brands with consumers and retails with consumers, mm-hmm. and should connect the experiences within any given environment. Mm-hmm. So we don't lay claim that we produce the technologies that do that. Mm-hmm. We don't. But what we do is figure out that architecture or that map and how that has to work. Mm-hmm. And then our developers and our engineers procure the right tools out there, and we bring it together for a full, you know, experience.
So connected, when you describe that, that suggests mm-hmm. that you can also facilitate online, that you can facilitate,
sure,
you know, whatever is happening on a smartphone or other smart device.
Sure.
Do you,
yes,
do that, or do you?
We have the capacity to do it, and mm-hmm. I have two of my favorite examples, which I can actually just talk briefly about, and you can actually see them also. So are you familiar with L'Occitane, the shop on 5th Avenue and 22nd Street, L'Occitane in Provence?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if you know Paul Blackburn. He's, you know, kind of a speaker in the industry. He's an architect mm-hmm. by trade, mm-hmm. but a real digital leader.
Yeah.
And he hired us to help them crack how to utilize digital for the purpose of giving millennials what they need to be able to engage with that brand and help the brand actually turn itself around. It was kind of losing its way.
And that's sort of potions and lotions.
It's potions, and you're absolutely right. It's potions and lotions for gals of a certain age. probably my age, not but
maybe why I'm not all that familiar with it.
But there's great products for guys as well, for men. But I grew up with this brand. I love it, right? So I was so excited to be able to jump in and figure out
my
how potion, we could...
My potions have a cork. But anyways.
That's good. You have a supply of them in your potion refrigerator, your potion closet.
Or twist off.
Twist, just crack the gap.
If it's from Australia.
Uh-huh, no box, right?
Yes.
Your potions in boxes?
in a pinch.
Why not?
Moving right along.
So this brand, or this retailer, because they're both in a way, this is a retailer and a brand, they lost their way with the next generation, which are the millennials, who are actually going to be the folks who will really be the future of their target. So they did a full store reawakening and created what I call a connected beauty fitting room. So here's what happens. You walk in to the store and you see a ton of product all around. It's beautifully merchandised. The lighting is beautiful. The fixturing is gorgeous. It's immersive and it's, you know, it's seductive and the like. But you don't have to touch anything and you don't have to talk to anybody. You go to the back of the store. You sit down at a table. It responds to you. So you take a seat. It rolls a video. It presents an index of four different categories. You touch the category that you're interested in, it reveals bestsellers. You tap the bestsellers of a particular product category you're interested in experiencing, it flies into an imaginary basket. It then takes your name and it pushes to a sales associate application. Mm-hmm. He or she is sitting in the back. They're not even anywhere to be found, but they're holding their tablet. And they'll know that Beth from seat one wants this, this, and this, and this. They'll go around the store, they'll take real sample sizes, real sizes, not tester sizes, and come and present the product experience to you. So that's an example of how, you know, technology works together to be able to deliver a do-it-yourself experience.
It makes the sales associate conversation a lot more comfortable because
it does.
You're already kind of dialed in as to what they want as opposed to feeling like you're being sold.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's really hands-off, and it's really exploratory as well. You know, you really can sit down, you can take your time, and it's all accessorized and propped and styled, so it feels like you're in a department store, but it's not chaotic.
Right.
Which I love. There's another experience in that shop, which is the gift creator tool. So we all have stressed over, you know, buying gifts for our loved ones for either Christmas or Mother's Day or Father's Day or birthdays. So this is an experience that presents you two pathways, gifts to make yourself or gifts that are pre-made. So no matter what the path is, you choose what you want, you push it to the back room, they wrap the gift for you, they get a gift card, and they walk it up to the front and they check you out with their mobile. So it's just nice little touches, ways of removing the friction, of taking the pain out of buying a gift, of being able to use what's successful about their online offering and bringing it in store. I call it going from e-com to shop-com.
Right.
Or R-com, right? Because it takes the best of the interface, strips away all the other stuff that's not needed in the environment, you know, and just presents something that's really easy to choose from. Mm-hmm. Doesn't bog you down with choice. So it's just enough to help you make a decision.
Right. Okay.
And I feel like that's, you know, the right kind of direction that more retailers should be taking.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Now, for CRI, what all would you have put together for that? And how much of that is your IP and how much are you relying on, like, third-party software partners and so on, interactive partners to pull that together? Are you like the master contractor?
We're a master contractor. Yep. We will take a CMS, you know, a platform, and we will create custom layers that sit on top of it that communicate with the CMS.
And but not necessarily your own CMS?
Not our own CMS, no. We have our own CMS, and that's geared toward the food service business. Mm-hmm. It's a CMS that was created to handle complex food service menu boards.
Right, because wireless roaming, which is what I'm sure what you're talking about, that would have been
That's absolutely right.
Built with KFC in mind and other ones that they were chasing.
And Burritoville and Starbucks.
Burritoville.
That's right. And a host of other
never heard of it, but anyways.
Apparently you get burritos in Burritoville.
That's
Buffalo Wild Wings.
That was clever.
A few others.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, they did have them as a client. Yeah.
Yep. KFC. Muya.
Okay.
Muya is a client. It's a hamburger joint. So, yeah, that was... That handled complex content changes, but it wasn't easy to use.
Right.
There was a problem with that because people avoided it. Let's say clients avoided it because it was tough to use. It really was. Mm-hmm. So we had invested significant money in getting that user experience, the back-end experience of managing that CMS, up to standard.
Right.
And it's still a couple years behind. But it works, and for those clients who are attached to it, for example, Aramark, they rely on it. Is it something that we would, you know, beat our chest and say, you must have it? Not necessarily.
Right.
But that's not the requirement. What's the requirement for us is being able to solve the pain point.
Yeah. If you're gonna
we're not a CMS company.
Yeah, if you're gonna be the master contractor, you can't just sit there and say, okay, how do we make this particular tool work for whatever your problem is.
That's right.
Because you're going to get chased out of the room in a lot of cases.
Well, it's also antithetical to our ethos and our premise, which
right.
is our ethos is we can sit down with you and help take the scariness out of technology planning mm-hmm. because we're people who aren't up in our own headspace about the technology itself.
Right.
We're about the utilization of the technology. So
yeah.
that allows us to kind of put everybody at ease. And that's the piece that I think is the most value because there's not a client I have worked with in my 6 years that hasn't been scared to death of every phase of tech planning. The only thing they're really comfortable with is getting user diagrams and the content planned.
Right.
You know, usually that's what they're most comfortable with.
Yeah, they don't care about that stuff. That's just a means to an end.
That's just a means to an end.
Right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so that's how we use a content management system. We use it to be able to distribute and to control mm-hmm. and to be able to take that headache and hassle
right.
off the retailer.
So what's the... How do you describe CRI right now? It's based in Louisville?
We're based in Louisville. That's
and
right.
Where are the offices? We're in New York.
Offices in New York were down at 55 Broadway mm-hmm. when we had acquired Wireless Ronin and we were integrating with Wireless Ronin. We had some change in leadership at that point. And I was running the design studio and I had a CFO with me and Rick Mills, who presided over Kinexys, mm-hmm. came in to see us mm-hmm. with the intention of acquiring us. I think what appealed to Rick in us, what he saw was our design thinking, was our strategic chops. Mm-hmm. I think he really respected the logos. We've got a real great set of clients that I'm super proud of that could stand, you know, on their own on Madison Avenue, you know,
right.
the client list. So that was something that was important to him. The way the industry is going is, you know, it's all fragmented. There's, as I think Jeff was saying, there's 3,200 CMS players or something. Did he say that?
Chris Riegel was saying that. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, the way that anybody's going to make money in the business is to acquire and consolidate and acquire and consolidate.
And offer recurring services.
Offer recurring services.
Yeah.
So our model provides for three sort of forms of revenue, okay? Design and consulting. I don't like the word consulting because it sounds airy-fairy, but it is
That's
the process of... It is the wink. I just winked to everyone
okay.
for the audience.
Yeah. The microphone captured that.
Noted. So design, experience design mm-hmm. and strategy, mm-hmm. if you will, and hardware procurement and being able to go out and kind of procure the best of the best for
right.
that particular situation. There's work and time and effort in doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And we are not paid off by any of our manufacturing partners. You know, we do that each and every time we do it for that particular
yeah.
client, you
mm-hmm.
know. And then, you know, integrating and being able to install, and then day two. So software as a service and support.
Right, so you can take it start to finish.
Exactly. Okay. We can take it start to finish, but we don't limit ourselves. You know, if a client just says, I need you to buy 3,000 screens and I need you to hang them in Circle K and go away,
That's
we might
fine
call
too.
That empty calories, mm-hmm. but we will do it.
Pays the bills.
It pays the bills. Our preference is to be able to obviously establish a long-term relationship with a client where we can continuously keep the content and the digital product mm-hmm. updated, current, fresh, and growing while they grow.
Okay.
That's really important. Analytics is really important in that because it gives us an opportunity to go back and say, what do we learn? Mm-hmm. What can we do differently? What new technologies can we plug in? We're very aware of creating or using platforms that are open architecture mm-hmm. so that we can slipstream new
right.
things in. So that's our model. That's
okay.
How
many people?
100 people.
Okay.
We have multiple offices. I'm really, really excited about where the company is going. I probably could have stepped away multiple times. We had some
chaos
behind me.
Yeah.
But I stuck with it because I feel our voice is different than what others are saying. And I have a lot of faith in I'm on the leadership team. I think Rick Mills is a great guy. He doesn't meddle with the marketing angle of it. Mm-hmm. You know, he has the numbers down and the operations down. He manages the P&L very tightly.
Yeah, when I talked to him, he said he was a turnaround guy, and it sounds like he's turning it around.
He's a turnaround guy, and he enables the folks that he trusts to come in and be able to lead the front end. Mm-hmm. So that's been exciting for me personally. And also, we're a big advocate of partners. So our partners are really, really important to us. They're a source of business development. They're a source of learning and growth. They're a source of inspiration for us. So mm-hmm. our partner relationships are important. And you know what? There's really no competitors. Everybody can be a friend. And that might sound democratic or overly, you know, or perhaps weak, but it isn't. The strength is, how can we team up in certain ways, and then how together can we scale that?
Mm-hmm. Well, the more good projects there are, the more retailers are going to buy into the idea of this is really what we should be doing, and maybe we ought to engage people who can make sure we do it properly.
I think the biggest, you know, stumbling block is the perceived budget.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a capital expenditure often. You know, as a marketing services person, we don't always know when people are coming in onto the market. So it's all about timing. So it's often a very long lead time, you know, to create deals. But if we keep it about the client's agenda and earning our right to advise them as such, we close the gap and we make ourselves credible. And we're not just a digital signage seller. We're actually account people who really know how to really nurture opportunities and then take a dispassionate view about the components and bring it together on behalf of a client. So that's our model.
Okay.
And we continue to put that out there.
All right. Hopefully. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around for more than 2 years. You can click around the archive and find more than 100 conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. There are now more than 6,000 posts in there about this industry. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside beautiful, amazing Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.